Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, the South Dakota Hall of Fame Nicholas Black Elk Symposium is in Rapid City at SDPB's Black Hills Bureau. You're invited to come down. 1:30 Mountain Time is a panel conversation with guests Charles Trimble, Myron Poirier, Bradley Salm, and Dale Lamphere are there for that conversation. Joining me now, so much to talk about for the rest of this hour, we have in SDPB's Black Hills studio, David Emery. He is chairman and CEO of Black Hills Energy. He's also the grandson of James Emery, and we're going to talk about the digitized Emery Lakota Language and Music Collection. But first, David Emery, thank you for joining us today in the program.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with David in the studio, we have Miles Beacom. He is CEO and president of First Premier Bank Card. He's a 2013 inductee into the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Miles Beacom, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Along with them, Brian Haig. He is a Rapid City attorney and board member of the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Brian, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you. It's a real honor to be here. Thank you.
David, I want to start with you. There's so much going on, but let's begin with this Emery Lakota Language and Music Collection, the digitization of that and the partnership between Black Hills Energy, South Dakota Hall of Fame. Give us an overview of what exactly this is for those who don't know.
Yeah, essentially the collection is something that my grandfather compiled from the 1950s through the 70s. He was essentially the product of a Lakota mother and an English father and grew up speaking both languages and, you know, in the 50s, kind of post-boarding school and all of his experiences there, recognized kind of the threat to the language and music and history of Lakota, which was largely unwritten at that time, and really kind of set out to document as much as he could. So in the 50s, he bought a reel-to-reel recorder and a machine that cut vinyl records from tapes and set about to record as many people and songs as he could. So a lot of relatives of prominent folks, Black Elk being one, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, a whole bunch of others, Frank Fool's Crow, and a lot of other people, and a lot of songs, traditional songs and stories, experiences. People like Dewey Beard, who, when he was recorded by Grandpa in the 50s, was one of the last living survivors of both the Little Bighorn and Wounded Knee. So that collection and basically the effort to distribute it amongst the community colleges and tribal colleges, as well as some of the state universities in the state, my dad went through that effort working in conjunction with Crazy Horse Memorial here about a little over a decade ago. And then, of course, after my grandpa's induction into the Hall of Fame asked if they could digitize those and start distributing them on the website. So something we're pretty excited about, that opportunity basically to have all of those stories, history, and music available for everyone's use.
One of the things I find fascinating about this is when you talk about your grandfather and the reel-to-reel and sort of the vision that he had that this was significant, he never could have, at the same time, he never could have foreseen that this might be digitized and available to, like, I wonder what he was thinking, that, you know, how it would be accessed and how it would be protected. So much has happened in the last, you know, 50 to 70 years that makes this even more significant than maybe even he realized.
Yeah, a lot of his work, you know, at the time, especially in the 50s and early 60s, he had a portable generator that he hauled in his car.
Wow.
Because most of the communities on the reservation where he was recording people didn't have electricity yet.
Sure.
And so, you know, his recorder was the first one that most of them had ever seen, and he really was considerably ahead of his time, probably a decade, maybe two, in really recognizing the threat to the Lakota language and some of the stories and cultural aspects associated with that. You know, in the 70s, particularly late 60s, early 70s, American Indian movement and those sorts of things, a lot of attention was placed on the need to preserve the language, and that's carrying on today even more so. But in the 50s and 60s, there really wasn't such an effort. So I think he was way ahead of his time. And in addition to the recordings, he taught Lakota language at Sinti Galeska College down in Rosebud and then at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, actually, before he died. So
We are going to play just a small excerpt of one, a piece from the digitized audio collection, and this is just a little bit of Ben Black Elk singing. If you're just tuning in, we're spending the hour talking about the legacy of Nicholas Black Elk, and we're also talking about the Emory Lakota Language and Music Collection, its digitization, the partnership between Black Hills Energy and South Dakota Hall of Fame. I would like to bring Miles Beacom into the conversation now, also an inductee into the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Nicholas Black Elk being a 2018 inductee into the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Talk a little bit about how this project and this story really resonates and ties in to the mission of the Hall of Fame, if you will, please.
Thank you. How it ties into the mission is really developing a culture of excellence within South Dakota, and then it's also communicating out to the general public all of the great things that have done by inductees of the Hall. And that's probably been our biggest weakness in the past, and it's really our focus today is how do we continue to share those great stories to really excite the youth and give them dreams and give them the ability to dream about the potential that they have in the future. You look at just about everyone out there that's been inducted, they've had some incredible challenges, but they've been able to find ways to overcome those challenges to be successful. When the challenge came up, they didn't throw in the towel. They worked hard to overcome that challenge, and you look at David's grandfather, what he did and what he had to do on his own to bring generators around to the reservations and to record these things, thinking that he wanted to save a piece of that history and what it's going to do in the future as well. If he wouldn't have taken the time and the energy and spent the dollars to do that, what would be missing today? And what a great avenue and tool that will be in the future. And we have so many stories in South Dakota that we just need to continue to share with the youth. Because, again, our goal is to be able to give these examples to the youth and really have them dream of the opportunities that they have in the future as well.
And it's about those opportunities for the youth, but it seems to me that it's also about a sense of who we are as, you know, and who we continue to be and who we can become.
And that's very true. And I said a lot of our heritage have been farmers, and I think that's one of the things that really give us incredible strength in South Dakota. Because back then, when my grandfather farmed, he didn't have the ability to call a store and say, come and fix my tractor or do this. They had to find ways to fix things on their own. And I think that creativity and ingenuity has really helped today, and we need to continue to push that down to the youth as well.
Mm. Brian Haig, I'd like to ask you a couple questions, too, about the South Dakota Hall of Fame. And what do you think it's sort of, you know, your current board member, the induction of Nicholas Black Elk, the significance of that really can't be understated, can it? Overstated. Can't be overstated, can it?
Not at all. The thing with the Nicholas Black Elk story is its compelling impact on pre-state history and post-state history. And bringing this up to the current time period, we see a living presence of Black Elk, and that's part of what a legacy is. And his story is not only compelling, but it still impacts our beautiful state in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. And what caught me up in the Black Elk story is I've read Black Elk Speaks, and I've been a bit of a history buff all along, and the naming of renaming of Harney Peak to Black Elk Peak was, in my opinion, way past due. He's a substantial, outstanding citizen, if you will, in post-statehood, and The one thing that we that has what struck me that we have in common, or the Black Elk legacy has in common with modern day, is he was called a holy man in the spiritual tradition of the Lakota, the shaman of the Great Sioux Nations, if you will, and a holy man in Christianity. It's the same meaning, and it's the same compelling context. And so we revere his legacy, and in my opinion, it's as much alive now as it was in the past. And I'm so enthused about his coming into the Hall of Fame, because his story needs to be told over and over, and the full story, not just bits and pieces that we've learned in the past.
Gentlemen, we need to take a momentary break, but I wanted to remind listeners they could head down to SDPB's Black Hill studio around 1:30 Mountain Time is when the panel discussion begins for the South Dakota Hall of Fame Nicholas Black Elk Symposium. I'd like to talk more about the Emory Lakota Language and Music Collection when we come back. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. You can stop by SDPB's Black Hills Bureau today at 1:30 Mountain Time for the South Dakota Hall of Fame Nicholas Black Elk Symposium. There will be a panel discussion. The guests on that panel, Myron Poirier, Charles Trimble, who is a journalist and 2013 South Dakota Hall of Fame inductee, Oglala Lakota, Bradley Salm, who is author of Black Elk Peak, A History, and artist Dale Amphir, the sculptor of Dignity of Earth and Sky. You can also watch that if you can't make it down to SDPB's Black Hills studio in the Part Central building on Main Street there. Watch it live on SD.net. We'll have a webcast for you of that panel discussion. My guests in the studio right now for In the Moment, David Emery with Black Hills Energy, Miles Beacom. He's representing the South Dakota Hall of Fame today, also president and CEO of First Premier Bank Card, and Brian Hegg, who is a Rapid City attorney, and he's with us as his role as a board member of the South Dakota Hall of Fame as well. David Emery, I'd like to know more about sort of how you first realized growing up with your father and your grandfather about this, the collection itself, the process of collecting, and just some of those conversations about how to preserve it.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're very small, of course, my grandparents lived in a tiny little house in North Rapid, and my grandpa had a recording studio in the basement.
Wow.
It was an unfinished basement. You actually had to go outside to the garage to get back in there. And the corner was literally full of reel-to-reel tapes and microphones and tape recorders and things like that. And the machine that would actually burn the vinyl records, which, of course, I think as a young child, I was much more fascinated with that machine than what he was recording.
Right.
you know, probably in the, you know, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 type period of my life, I started listening a lot more to the stories my grandpa would tell and really realized what a little bit more about what he was doing. Probably didn't have a full appreciation for it until I was in my early teens, and he died when I was 14, so I didn't get a chance to learn as much from him as I would have preferred, but what I did, I think, left a very valuable lesson for me. And, you know, there was always people at his house. He had a teepee in the yard, typically for extra guests, because it was a tiny little house, and frequent visitors, actually, were Ben Black Elk and his wife, and so there's a lot of recordings of Ben in my grandpa's collection. Probably one of the most notable ones is of what's now very commonly sung on every reservation in the state is the Lakota Flag Song. Mm-hmm. That was actually composed by Ben and another individual named Chris Beagle in my grandpa's basement.
Wow.
In 1954 and recorded there. And the story behind it was Ben was coming back from Ethity, Wyoming, on the Arapaho Reservation there, and they had a Arapaho National Anthem song that was kind of a similar theme. And so when he came back, he was talking about it with Grandpa and Chris, and they basically decided to write one and sing it and record it kind of on the spot there. And now today, if you go to basically any sporting event or powwow or anything on any reservation in the state, that song's almost always sung at the beginning. So wow. It's kind of a neat tie into that Black Elk story, I think.
That's a remarkable story. And when we talk about the digitized collection and the partnership with the Hall of Fame, and I'm not sure which one of you wants to answer this, Miles or David, but what is that? How is that going to roll out? And will there be, a part of it that helps, listeners, viewers kind of figure out what is what and some and learn some of those stories that go along with the recordings?
Well, I think one of the things is we really want to have it digitized at the Hall of Fame, and it'll be able to be accessed from the Hall of Fame, and we're hoping for through other avenues as well. Just listening to David here, I think one of the other things we need to do is record David and his story, because of how all those things happened, we really don't have that history.
Right.
And I think that would be great to have at the hall as well. And him with the recordings in the teepee or in the house, the small house, and what his grandfather had to go through, those are the things that I would really want to be able to share, and the hall wants to be able to share with the public to understand some of the sacrifices these inductees made, and again, some of the challenges that they went through. But it's so important not only to kind of read about what they did, but I think it's important to understand those challenges and how they overcame those challenges, because that's all part of the story. And if they wouldn't have done that at that point in time, we wouldn't have that song sang at every event that's out there today. And that's how important that is for this state. And that's the thing that we have to continue to not only educate how it got there, but what it took to get there.
Right. What time frame are we looking about? How big is the collection, and when do you anticipate folks being able to access the digitized files?
I think the total collection's about 300 and almost 50 CDs, I think.
Wow.
And they've got, 70 done, Miles, something like that?
Yes. So we have a ways to go yet.
Right.
But again, once it's completed, and then I think what we really need to do is be able to tie in David's story of how those were built to really tie everything together.
Right. David, tell me about your father and sort of how he, interacted with your grandfather in the project and its preservation.
Yeah, well, my dad was one of five kids, basically. Had one older sister lived here, but he was the only one who stayed here in the hills, if you will. Actually was an employee at Black Hills as well. He was a Southern Hills manager here. When my grandpa died in particular, he helped kind of lead the family effort, if you will, to find a home for the tapes. I think recognizing the historical significance of those, a lot of different universities were interested in them. Most of my dad's siblings went to Black Hills State, and at the end of the day, the collection ended up there. That it was a time when it was hard to decide what to do with the collection, I think, and Black Hills, it was pre-digital age and all that, so they made copies, they made available to Lakota Studies students for research. Some of them did some translation work and things on those, but availability to a large number of people was not happening. And so that's really what happened about a decade ago or so, as my dad, who was very close to Ruth Jokowski at Crazy Horse, had lots of conversations. And of course, the family there knew my grandfather very well and knew about the collection, and Ruth always wanted a copy. And so my dad kind of worked out a deal with Ruth where if she would get them copied and digitized, that he would give her, a copy of the collection.
Yeah.
And then the other part of the deal was they would make 9 more copies, which Dad gave to the universities and the tribal colleges in the state. And that happened about 10 years ago, late 2007, 2008, when those copies were distributed. But what I like about the hall's effort now is that they're available to anyone anywhere, not just at the colleges and universities in South Dakota and Standing Rock in North Dakota as well. But I think this takes it to a different level where anyone interested in those stories can have access to them. Of course, a lot are in Lakota only, There's a lot where my grandfather will do some English introductions. Sometimes he does it in Lakota, so it's a little bit hard for everyone to understand exactly what's going on. But then there's a lot that he's translated as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the Dewey Beard stories of Wounded Knee in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, for example, have Dewey Beard's original words and translations by my grandfather as well. So you know, a little bit of everything in that collection.
I just keep wanting to say, wow, again and again. What a remarkable effort and project and story. Brian Haig, you know, you mentioned Black Hilk Speaks, you know, that story in that book. And I recalling a story that we heard once on this show about a photograph by Bill Groth of Black Elk himself. Do you have that? Tell us that story. Tell us a little something.
Well, Bill Grothy.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bill Grothy has been a outstanding South Dakota citizen and photographer. His gift to South Dakota transcends photography, but he is now in his mid-90s. He took one of the last pictures of Black Elk in 1948, and the story Bill tells me, the other Lakota leaders that are in the famous picture taken in that year got together and allowed Bill to take some pictures. Bill said, I had two shots left in the camera, with the camera of the day, and he said, I thought I was going to not be able to get it done with two shots, because those cameras took typically many shots. Anyway, Black Elk, the decline coming down to the picture-taking area that day, and said, Mr. Grothy, or left, sent a message, Mr. Grothy, if you want to take my picture, come to my lodge. Grothy went up there, and he said, I was so moved and basically transfixed with in his presence, but he said, I took two pictures, and they both turned out. And the one you see on the poster that's being circulated was taken by Bill Grothy in 1948. And, of course, we know that Nicholas passed away a few years later. Hmm. It's very compelling, and it continues to be a compelling story of his legacy.
Miles Beacom, as we talk about the symposium today at SDPB's Black Hills studio, it's a, you know, there's a gathering, there's a celebration, but there also seems to be, as we tell more and more of these stories, sort of you know, a weight to it, a gravitas, there's a sense of really what is being shared, the importance of it. Do you feel that sense of celebration, but also, you know, significance about the gathering and the conversations today around this project?
Absolutely. There's an incredible significance to this. There's a lot of excitement going on because it's preserving something that is truly needed. And one of the challenges that the Hall has had over the years is really finding the time to get the word out of all of the great things that have happened with the prior inductees. And one of the challenges we have right now is we really want to record a lot of inductees. We have information on the website of the accomplishments, but it doesn't state the challenges that they went through, and we want to understand the full story. So that's one of the pushes we have now, is really to get out there and interview each of the inductees that we have to understand the true story. And just as David was walking through, the challenges of his grandfather and the things that they did, they took those steps, and it would have been easy to say, no, I don't want to do that and do other things, but he took the time, he made the commitment to do that, and what it's preserved for South Dakota is incredible. And again, with the time when Greta Chapman, the CEO of the Hall of Fame, started 5 years ago, the thought was, how do we expand the acknowledgement and the knowledge of what's going on in the Hall? And it was really to free up some of her time. When she started, she was spending 100% of her time trying to raise money to pay off the bills on an annual basis. And so over the last 18 months, we've had a endowment campaign. We call it the 2020 Vision Endowment Campaign. And it's really to raise $3 million to free up a third of her time every year to really push and continue to expand on what we know of the inductees, and to make the Hall a much more of a household name. So again, the young people can understand the challenges. And we, what we want to do is have the young people dream and then to chase those dreams and for them to know that they can and they can accomplish those dreams as well. I'm happy to say to date, we've raised over $2.1 million. So we're getting close to that $3 million goal. But again, those are the things that we need to do to continue to expand the knowledge of everything that has been built in the hall and continue to further each of those inductees, the stories as well. We have information on them up until the time they were inducted, but we need to expand that after they were inducted and then really to talk to each of them to get the full story, to understand some of the hardships they went through.
David Emery, let's talk about a little bit of those challenges that sort of faced James Emery, your grandfather, Jim Emery, your father, and yourself. But as you sort of watched this growing up as a young man, and people came and joined in those conversations in the basement or in the teepee or around the kitchen table, talk about challenge, please.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, this is what my grandfather did. He worked... But literally every penny of his disposable income went into this effort, really, for decades. The generators and some of those things, those were very expensive pieces of equipment in those days. And he was a laborer, he didn't really have the money to afford things like that. But he had a pretty extensive collection of that equipment. So he sacrificed basically what he believed is a serious need to preserve Lakota language and culture and preserve that for future generations, having been a product of the boarding schools where he was whipped for speaking his language. He was shipped to Haskell Indian School in Lawrence, Kansas to learn a trade, rather than go to college. So I think he recognized the need to really intercept that effort, if you will, and kind of preserve the language. So he devoted most of the rest of his life to that effort. As I said earlier, I think he was way ahead of his time in the 50s and 60s, and then in the 70s, as some of the tribal colleges were starting to develop their own Lakota language textbooks, he helped, edit and some of that work on some of those textbooks, like at Sinte Galeshka College on Rosebud, for example. But then I think everyone else kind of realized that it was as big a deal as he had been saying it was for a couple decades prior to that.
Yeah. Do you have a sense that he understood that it was coming, that people were catching up with him? Did he have an awareness of that? Did he know that was coming? Like sooner or later they'll see? Do you have a sense from listening to him that he felt that way?
Well, I think he was a huge advocate, It was interesting that, I've run into people, from as far away as the Crow Reservation, Arapaho, Shoshone people in Wyoming, who know my grandfather, because he recorded them too.
Wow.
And so, I think the word traveled in those days that, hey, this guy's out here with a tape recorder doing this stuff, and then people would start inviting him that, hey, my grandpa's got some stories to tell too. Well, you record him. And so a lot of these families, the Two Bulls and the Short Bulls and the Crazy Horse and Red Cloud and a lot of the family members and relatives of those Lakota leaders all sought Grandpa out to have their relatives recorded as well.
Gentlemen, I want to say thank you so much for your efforts here and for spending this hour with us. My guests have been David Emery with Black Hills Energy, Chairman and CEO, Miles Beacom, CEO and President, First Premier Bank Card, and a 2013 inductee into the South Dakota Hall of Fame, Brian Haig, Rapid City attorney and board member of the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.